Good morning, Sleepy Town. I'm Beau Bartlett, and you're listening to The Art House. Art House Radio, coming to you from way down, in beautiful downtown Columbus, Georgia. Also known as Magnolia, Georgia. Beautiful, mythical Magnolia, Georgia. From the stations of WCUG. We're also heard over on OHM Radio, WOHM, Charleston, South Carolina. So glad you're with us this morning on the radio. We have a great show for you this morning. We have a wonderful guest with us this morning, Kayla Hunter, writer, environmentalist, Kayla Hunter. Good morning, Kayla. How are you this morning?
Hey, Beau. Good morning. I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
Glad you're with us this morning on the radio.
Me too.
Thanks. And Sho, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great.
I don't know where that came from.
I'm better.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm a little better.
I thought you were Beau.
Stop it, Sho. So we're gonna have a word of the day. That's what we do on the show. We have a word of the day on the radio show. We have a word of the day. And the word of the day today is Anthropocene.
Ooh, I love that word.
Anthropocene. I don't have the definition in front of me. Do you want to try it, Kayla? Do you want me to try it?
It's a term that scientists and sociologists are using to kind of define the new epoch that we're currently in. Basically saying we're no longer in the Holocene. We're in the era of man, the era where man has had such a significant imprint and impact on the earth that, you know, it's time to relabel the time that we're in.
We're in a new era.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Yes.
But if we weren't in it, we wouldn't be in it. So we're in it.
Exactly.
And we have a quote of the day today. Today also, Kayla brings our quote of the day.
Let's see. I have to do it from memory. Okay. Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. That is Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
That is a great quote. Nothing's going to get better.
Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot.
That's a great quote. Gosh, we need that today. So also, you're going to start us off with a little bit of music, doing our DJing this morning. So who are we going to listen to first? What are we going to hear first this morning?
We're going to start out with Krungbin. They're a nice, any feeling music. You're sad, you're happy, if you're calm, cool, collected. They're great.
Great choice, Krungbin.
Thank you.
That was Karanga Ben. You're listening to The Art House on 88.5 WCUG and OHM Radio, WOHM 96.3 Charleston. I'm Bo Bartlett, and we're here with Kayla Hunter. Good morning, Kayla.
Good morning.
You are an environmental journalist?
Yeah.
Climate change journalist?
Yeah.
Here in Columbus. We're so happy to have you here. You write for the Columbus Ledger Inquirer.
Mm-hmm.
You find and choose subjects and topics from around town that need addressing.
Yeah, exactly.
We have many topics.
Yes.
Many subjects, many things that need addressing around town. But we're so glad you're here. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about your life and what got you interested in the environment from a young age. And so tell us a little bit about your childhood, where you're from, and you know, what may have sparked this interest in you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I wish I had some I was wandering in a forest when I was 5 years old story, but
You can tell that story.
Well, I grew up in New Mexico, so I grew up in the desert just outside of Albuquerque. I can remember really big storm clouds coming in the summer during the monsoon season and always being really infatuated with weather and storms, and kind of obsessively when I was maybe in my early teens, obsessed with tornadoes and the just kind of the raw power of Mother Earth. So yeah, I'm from New Mexico, and I kind of grew up outside of the city. I changed states when I was 18 in college. I went to Colorado, but I don't really feel like this kind of environmental activist or environmental writer side of me came out until maybe I was in my later teens. But I do remember seeing movies like An Inconvenient Truth when I was, I think 12. Mm-hmm. And, that really stuck with me. That really shaped me.
Did you want to be a meteorologist when I was a kid?
I did, actually.
I did too. I wanted to be a weatherman.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I did.
Because I loved, I thought of myself as being able to predict the weather a day in advance by just the clouds and everything.
Yeah.
So I would always say, oh yeah, look, it's going to rain tomorrow. And my father would be, what are you talking about? You know, and I'd say, well, look at the weather. And so, from an early age, I wanted to be a weatherman. And I imagined myself, wearing the suit and tie and standing in front of one of those. Actually, back then it was chalkboards.
Oh my gosh.
They drew the weather on chalkboards.
Yeah, but it was a different kind of green background, not a green screen, but chalkboard.
No green screens back then.
Right.
Yeah, this is way back.
Yeah, no, I did think about meteorology, but I feel like I have a pretty balanced left and right brain. You know, there's this kind of scientific side that I'm interested in, but also this kind of poetic, writing, softer side. And I feel like meteorology really, I don't know which side of the brain it is, but it kind of only appeals to one of those sides. And mm-hmm. So that never really, I just never followed that.
See, for me, when I was young, Doug Wallace was a local weatherman, and he was an artist as well. So he drew the weather patterns on the chalkboard. And so for me, I was getting my left brain, right brain balance.
Your fix.
Yeah, right there every day. So I thought, well, maybe I could do one or the other of them.
Yeah.
So so you grew up in, was it outside of Albuquerque?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's beautiful country.
Yeah, it is. And I didn't realize how unique it was until I left. I thought it, a lot of places looked like that. But, we never owned horses, but I would go to a horse camp every summer and learn to ride. So I really had the out west experience.
Did you have brothers and sisters? And
I have a younger brother. Uh-huh. He's adopted. He's Korean. So he was adopted when I was about 3.5 or 4. So we grew up together with my parents, of course, until my parents split when I was around 8. My mom remarried. We moved kind of more in the city within Albuquerque. So kind of got the city experience in middle school and high school within Albuquerque.
So you didn't know at that point where you were headed. You obviously are a great writer. So,
oh, thanks.
I mean, you were interested in writing, I presume, always, or you would just say we're good at it. I don't know.
How does one become a good writer? I can remember really liking creative writing, mm-hmm. really feeling even just journaling, it felt really cathartic. Mm-hmm. There's different things you have to kind of work through in life. And so I felt like that was something I enjoyed and felt productive. And I always enjoyed, English classes. But yeah, there was not a strong kind of journalist or writer instinct until much later.
So, Inconvenient Truth, I guess a parent would have taken you to that. My mom, yeah. God bless her.
Yeah, she's definitely kind of really embodies a, I don't know if activist is the right word, but she's just a very passionate person. Usually tries to always lean on the side of justice.
Yeah.
She's also, she was an ordained Presbyterian minister at one point too.
Wow.
And has kind of shared a lot of her, you know, values and things like that with me.
Sounds like you had a very good foundation.
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
I remember seeing Inconvenient Truth. I saw it in Seattle. And it was life-changing for me. I mean, I was an adult. I was married and living in Seattle with Betsy. But, you know, even though a lot of these things in The Inconvenient Truth you sort of knew, and one wondered at the time if it wasn't a little bit reactionary and a little bit...
hyperbolic.
Sensationalist,
yeah.
Yes. But, boy, you know, what are we 20 years later?
Yeah.
It's coming faster than... expected or
yeah.
predicted, actually.
Right. Yeah. So that with that, and then I think at the time there was also this trend of fictional kind of apocalyptic weather movies like,
yeah.
What's that one called with Jake Gyllenhaal? The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh,
that
yeah,
one like
right.
totally freaked me out. And I was like, oh my God, this is how we're going to, you know, it's just like these massive ice hurricanes over like three continents. And so... between the two of those, I was like, well, I feel like there's something like afoot here, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm completely there. That was a one of those pivotal moments. But, and you were only going to be able to get the people to go see it that already were interested in seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was my experience with it. I mean, we weren't going to get people to see it even now, you know, even this many years later, to watch it. If they're not predisposed to watch it mm-hmm. in the first place, which is one of the dilemmas. You know, people, we're in our lanes and, you know, we're pretty much going to stay in our lanes.
I think. Yeah. And if anything, things have become even more polarized since then. So
no question.
So yeah, those types of, you know, those are both stories, right? One's kind of a more documentary. One's, this kind of intense fictional story, but, yeah, storytelling seemed to really, stick with me then. But yeah, when I wasn't, you know, watching movies that might be a little too intense for a 12-year-old, I was, I got into swimming in high school.
Oh,
so
great.
I was a swimmer. I loved swimming. It was like the first sport I was actually good at.
So was that competitive and on a high school team?
Yeah. I was just at the Albuquerque High School swim team. Just Albuquerque High, Bulldogs, go Bulldogs. and I started my sophomore year, actually. Freshman year, I was still kidding myself, thinking I was good at soccer, and I wasn't. And so tried something different. And my dad and I would actually swim in the summer, and he can remember still the summer that I beat him. And he was like, okay. So that was kind of what I was like, yeah, I guess I'll try out for the swim team.
Nice.
And then my senior year, I was captain, and I got the award for the most improved swimmer. So I really went up, and that was really, really great. And I swam in state, and yeah, that was such a great form of exercise.
Yeah. And it was meditative at the same time.
Exactly. Super yes. meditative. Really, really hard. My coach really pushed us.
Wow.
Yeah. He was a great mentor. He was also my calculus teacher.
Shout out to him.
Shout out to Jimmy Phillips.
Thank you, Jimmy Phillips. I think it's a good moment to hear some more music. Do you have another song lined up that you'd like for us to hear?
Yeah, I keep thinking about the one, I forget the artist, but the song's called Charmed. Charmed by Stella.
You
That was Charmed by Stella. DJ'd by Kayla Hunter, our guest today on The Art House. So Kayla, thanks. You were saying that you had graduated high school. What happened when you decided to go off to school, off to college? You were still in Albuquerque?
No, I decided to go to a small liberal arts school in Southwest Colorado called Fort Lewis College in the town of Durango. It was just far enough away to kind of be away, live my own life, but close enough to drive 4 hours home for holidays. And I can remember the first week of orientation, kind of we got to like sample some classes, and one of the professors who happened to be the chair of the environmental science department was like describing the giant plastic gyres of ocean trash in the Atlantic. Like he was kind of, you can't see it because we're on a radio show, but I'm doing a swirling motion with my finger. And he was kind of
a spiral
moving his hands. And I was entranced. I was like, oh my gosh, like I can take a course by this guy. Like I can just learn all of these kind of issues and surround myself around others who really care about these things. So from there I was like, okay, so if I declared my major and worked with him for the next 4 years and took all kinds of really interesting classes. And I can remember one of my PE classes was actually hiking. So I got really much more in touch with kind of the outdoors up there at the 6,512 mile high city. So that was really great. And I would even go on to study abroad in Brazil for a semester my junior year. And I had a chance to go to Costa Rica the summer after my freshman year to kind of learn about how their conservation efforts have enhanced tourism and things like that. So I really was able to dabble in a lot of different, you know, aspects of, you know, conservation, understanding different economic systems, taking like water politics and policy classes. So I was, you know, I was on cloud nine in college. I mean, I can remember I took like an ecological medicine course, weather and climate, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, that really started to get the gears turning. And it wouldn't be until my last semester when I wrote a kind of my seminar final piece about, this would have been in 2015. So this was, Obama had vetoed the Keystone XL pipeline, which at the time was kind of it was a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. So my paper really talked about the two big things really were the economic advantages, why do this, and kind of the environmental harm and why he didn't do it and the significance of him vetoing that. And so that was the first time I really like dove into taking apart pieces that create a really important story. And I thought for the first time, I was like, maybe I want to do journalism.
Oh, mm-hmm.
But I would go on to have other jobs and didn't pursue journalism yet.
Yeah. What does one think one might do with the degree?
Of studying the environment?
Yes, it's a little bit like, what are you going to do with an art degree? Or
yeah, yeah. Just like kind of, you know, gung-ho. I was infatuated with this idea of like, I just want to like help mitigate climate change. That was my North Star. So I started just looking for jobs at solar power plants and things that were, you know, not related to fossil fuels. And eventually I got a job as an environmental manager for a solar power plant outside of Vegas. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Nevada for like 10 months, wore the hard hat and the orange vest, and not my dream job, but it was really a good experience.
For sure. And so this was a like a municipal solar power plant?
It was...
How did that...
It was out like south of an area called Boulder City, right, mm-hmm, along the Arizona and Nevada border. I think it could power like 10,000 homes, mm-hmm, something like that. So, and they would actually go to power California, not Nevada.
Okay.
So,
I see. All right.
Yeah, so it was a big company that essentially owned it and operated it.
So you're there for a while and then you...
Yeah, and then I was like, well, it's, you know, construction, corporate, not really for me. I start kind of really trying to figure out myself and figure out what I want to do. I saved up money and I had a new Subaru for this job, and I went on a road trip by myself.
Oh.
I went...
always cathartic.
Yeah. A little scary, but like, yeah, super amazing. And I wrote on Facebook, like, hey, friends, I'm going up Highway 1. And whose couch can I stay on?
And what year are we talking?
This would have been 2016, I think. Okay. Mm-hmm. And or maybe it was 2017. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going all the way up to through Portland to Seattle, went to Vancouver for a day just to say I went to Canada, came back down and fell in love with San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And traveled back through like Utah and Durango, of course, and came home to Albuquerque. And I looked at my mom and I said, I'm moving to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I took a job as a kayak guide for this really amazing nonprofit that took people with disabilities and sort of inner city low-income youth on kayak trips in the Bay Area mm-hmm. that normally wouldn't have an opportunity. Oh, great. So I was their kind of intern and did that for a summer and eventually made friends with folks that were volunteering with this nonprofit. And through them, I was able to find out about a job at Google. And because of my construction experience, I applied and I got the job. The job was identifying building materials that were healthy or not healthy, I should say, for new construction projects. Mm-hmm. So basically, someone had to vet these like thousands of materials for a new Google campus mm-hmm. to say it's going to be like the healthiest possible for new Google employees. And that was my job for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, super kind of niche and unique, amazing experience. But again, like it didn't really tug at my heartstrings. It was right. Like, okay, this is interesting. This is great. It's more kind of the public health side of things. And then I wanted to stay in San Francisco. So I got a job at an urban forestry company and I did their marketing. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started doing a little bit more writing again, case studies of this urban tree product that basically enhanced soil volume. It's called SilvaCell. Shout out to Deep Root. Mm-hmm. That's the company I worked for. And I started to kind of have to tell a story about how the tree was before our product and after and show pictures and get quotes from landscape architects. And I did that for 3 years through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And when the pandemic happened, that's when I had this big light bulb moment. Like, you know, oh, and I forgot to mention too, I thought about journalism when I was out at the solar power plant. Mm-hmm. I thought about it then too. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like it's, you know, you don't make a lot of money, you know, right. Just yeah. forget that idea. Yeah. But it bubbled up again during mm-hmm. the pandemic.
And you were, did you have to work
from home
remotely at
yeah.
that point? And so we all reassessed everything at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. yeah. The world sort of turned upside down and we all kind of, I mean, I was like, is this really what I want to do? Yeah. What do I really want to do? Mm-hmm. So I started just, I think the writing for Deep Root, you know, I wrote for their blog, like that started to give me the confidence that you just have to keep writing and you just have to keep trying and doing different things. And so I wrote a story about San Francisco's composting program. It was the first one in the country, I think it was in like 96. And about my first few days ever living and experiencing San Francisco. And anyway, I pitched it to a local newspaper within San Francisco and they published it. So from there, I just kept kind of starting to freelance, if yeah. you will, and yeah. made a website and just kind of kept going.
All right. So that's going to lead us to here, to where we are now. Let's hear a little more music. Let's hear some, what do you think? What would we like to hear next on?
Let's do one of the Brazilian samba songs I chose.
Yeah.
The artist João Gilberto, I really like his stuff too.
Gilberto's great.
Sonhando mil horas sem fim. Tempo em que vou perguntando se gostas de mim. Tempo de falar em estrelas, falar de um mar, de um céu assim. Falar do bem que se tem, mas você não vem, não vem. Você não vindo, não vindo, a vida tem fim. Gente se rindo, falando, zombando de mim. E eu a falar em estrelas, mar, amor, luar. Pobre de mim que só sei te amar. Música. O pato vinha cantando alegremente, quen, quen, quando o marreco sorridente pediu para entrar também no samba, no samba, no samba. O ganso gostou da dupla e fez também quen, quen, quen. Olhou pro cisne e disse assim: vem, vem, que um quarteto ficará bem, muito bom, muito bem. Na beira da lagoa foram ensaiar para começar o tico-tico no fubá. A voz do pato era mesmo desacato, jogo de cena com o ganso era mato. Mas eu gostei do final, quando caíram na água, ensaiando o vocal, quen, 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 quen. O pato vinha cantando alegremente, quen, quen, quando o marreco sorridente pediu para entrar também no samba, no samba, no samba. O ganso gostou da dupla e fez também quen, quen, quen. Olhou pro cisne e disse assim: vem, vem, que um quarteto ficará bem, muito bom, muito bem. Na beira da lagoa foram ensaiar para começar o tico-tico no fubá. A voz do pato era mesmo desacato, jogo de cena com o ganso era mato. Mas eu gostei do final, quando caíram na água, ensaiando o vocal, quen, 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 quen.
So we're back. You're listening to The Art House on 88.5 WCUG, Columbus, Georgia, and WOHM, Charleston, South Carolina. I'm here with our guest, Kayla Hunter, environmental journalist. And so, Kayla, let's see, where were we? You were living in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And working for
Deep Root.
Deep Root.
And I started freelancing. I started pitching to local news outlets, and I got a lot of pieces in the Noe Valley Voice. I lived in Noe Valley, and I made a conscious decision. I want to go to grad school for journalism. I really want to pivot my career, and I don't want to work, you know, a smaller paper forever. Like, I'd like to go somewhere big at some point. Like, I want to really have a career in this. This isn't just like a hobby or a little stunt, because of course my mom and parents said, don't go to grad school, don't take out the loans. And yeah, I was like, but if I want to work for the New York Times or like the Washington Post, like I can't just pitch a few things to a small like I need the school.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to Berkeley, and well, first I created a website, put all of my clips on the website, and then used that as a portfolio to apply to grad school. Didn't get into Berkeley. Heartbroken, devastated.
No, no.
And just kept, did it all again for a whole year. So then applied to Berkeley and Northwestern this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into Northwestern. And it's only a one-year program. And Berkeley is, I think, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense. And I found out in February of 22 that I got in, and in, you know, March or April, I told Deep Root I'm moving on. And in May, I had a garage sale and put everything that belonged to me in my car, in my Subaru, that same Subaru, she's still with me, and drove to Chicago and moved there and did an intense one-year master's program.
Wow.
The Masters of Science in Journalism that really focused on environment, climate change reporting, things like that. And I had incredible experiences there. I had a chance to go down to the Yucatan for a week with a professor and 10 other students to learn about a train being built down there that rips through indigenous Maya territory. And I wrote an article and that got published in Cultural Survival. So I started to get my pieces actually published in grad school. And so it really felt like, okay, things are going the way I want them to. The whole time I was there, I was like, this is exactly what I want to be doing, which felt great. You know, it's scary to take that dive. And I had to do an embedded reporting project, and I worked with glacial geologists, and we lived on a boat in southern Chile for a month.
We've had quite the experiences.
Yeah. And wow. I turned that into a little 10-minute documentary, so okay. You can see that on my website if you want to go check it out.
What is the website while we're here?
It's super easy, kalahunter.com.
K-A-L-A.
Mm-hmm, kalahunter.com.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept it simple. I haven't seen that.
I want to see that video. So yeah, I mean, that was, you know, amazing. No Wi-Fi, no internet for a month. I mean, that's a hard diet these days.
That will get you back in touch with reality.
And then I came back from that journey, and then started looking for jobs. And I saw a climate change reporter in somewhere called Columbus, Georgia.
Wow.
And I was like, huh, I've never heard of that place.
No one had.
But I applied because that's exactly what I want to work on. And here I am.
What a journey. Was this the train through the Yucatan?
Uh-huh.
Is that the one that goes down south of Tulum and goes all the way down? Is this
yeah.
the one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just down there recently for a wedding, and I saw that. I mean, it's a lot of construction right alongside the highway where they're just plowing through these trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a big deal.
Yeah, it's huge.
The president of Mexico is you know, thrilled and is pushing for it. And really what a lot of indigenous and locals are saying is like, look, we weren't really, you know, consulted or asked about this. And maybe we don't want, you know, floods and droves of tourists to kind of come down here. And so there's this kind of battle again of what is kind of ethical tourism look like and what sort of projects ought we pursue as a society.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the people who want to go down there for the most part were people who wanted to try to, you know, get in touch with the pristine aspects of nature. You go down that far, it takes a long time to get there. We went down to a place called Bacalar for a friend's wedding. I mean, it takes forever to get there. I mean, you know, you're driving on this little tiny road and you're like, how long does it take to get here? It's so far. And you finally get down there and you realize the reason that it's so pristine is because there's nobody there.
Right.
Because it's too far away. And then so you wind up putting this tourist train through there, and it's going to spoil the whole reason people wanted to go in the first place.
Yeah. And a lot of the issues with the train too is that it's being pushed too quickly and it's bypassing a lot of like really important environmental laws. And I even talked to some cenote and kind of cave
yes.
experts, and they're saying, you know, they're building these trains over, maybe it was limestone. I forget mm-hmm. the type of rock, but that it's really fragile. And I mean, they shouldn't even be building it over this. And if there were to be some sort of a train leak or spill, you know, that could leach into this fresh water that's been preserved for millennia.
Forever.
So, so there's a lot of potential environmental consequences. So yeah, that was a really incredible journey.
They have this rock down there that's sort of like limestone, but it's alive. It's sort of like coral. I'm not sure of the name of that, but it's this. It's the only place in the world where this stuff exists, and it's in these lakes that are, you know, near the cenotes. And yeah, that stuff is precious and fragile and would be at risk for sure, even with just more tourists with suntan lotion on.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So yeah, what a fragile ecosystem. Well, we're so glad you're here in Columbus because there's, you know, the consciousness raising which needs to happen is sort of obvious. But tell us a little bit about some of the stories you've written about why you've been here.
Yeah, some of them have focused on sort of agriculture and how, you know, changing climate is changing what actually can grow in the state. You know, I reference the story about how more and more olive growers are coming to Georgia and peaches are starting to have to move further and further north. At the same time, I've talked about this kind of lack of ability to sort of eat things locally. There's not a lot of fresh food options. I've also had a chance to write about the federal laws, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and how those funds have trickled down into really tangible changes. You know, one I can think of is the school in Caseta.
Caseta.
Caseta. I always say that one wrong. Uh-huh. Yep. In Caseta, using those funds to get electric school buses. And up in another county north of here did the same thing. You know, that was really interesting to be able to talk to them about why they made that change and how it essentially was almost free for them. They just had to apply.
Right.
And Muskogee County School District did not apply. And so that was, you know, an interesting story to be able to highlight.
Do you think that it was just not paying attention that they didn't apply, or do you think that it was like a political?
Oh, they said that it was because it didn't make sense with their routes, how frequently they would need to be charged. But it, I mean, if they can be out in Chattahoochee County,
right.
then they can certainly, you know, run around within Columbus.
For sure.
So that was kind of their reasoning.
There's a lot of misunderstanding about charging, and people are like afraid that, you know, their vehicle's going to get stranded somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We have an EV, so I know how easy it is to be able to, you know, just charge at night if you plan on taking a trip the next day. And,
right.
You know, we charge at home.
Yeah, and it's just such a shift in mindset, you know. Yeah. It's like this idea of coming home empty, right? Like, that's backwards of what we've been taught for decades,
right.
with cars.
And so, I mean, in a place like Columbus, it makes perfect sense because our electricity is hydro. You know, it comes from the dams and the water. So it's very renewable, and, you know, holistically speaking, it's a system which is, you know, self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
You also had an article recently about solar in Columbus in Georgia. Didn't I see that?
With the sheep?
Yes, with the sheep.
Yeah.
You mentioned that a little too.
That one was out in just south of Macon. That was a really interesting story. Basically, this company is starting to tap into the sheep industry in addition to solar, and they're utilizing sheep as a way to manage the growth beneath the panels and add kind of more of a biodynamic life, you know, from their feces and everything that kind of happens within the soil. So they're sort of suggesting it's better for soil health, better for the environment. You know, they're not using mowers and things like that.
Right.
So it's kind of a sheep solar industry that's happening. And those solar panels, those solar projects are with the electric co-ops. They're not through Georgia Power, which is also kind of another interesting aspect of that project. They're a pretty big company. I think they have like a dozen projects in Georgia. So that was a really interesting one to cover.
So it's sort of rent a rudiment. Is it separate from the solar company, or is it solar company and the sheep company?
They own the sheep.
Oh, they own the sheep.
They own the sheep. Yeah. So they're, like I said, they're adding a new portfolio to their business.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So what other environmental issues have you tackled in Columbus? I know that a couple of things I saw on your Instagram feed had, or maybe it was a Ledger Inquirer feed, maybe, on Instagram had sort of...
Ruffled feathers.
Ruffled a few feathers, exactly. Yeah. That was the... Was that the one about the fire? Was that... There was a large fire. Was that last summer?
Oh yeah, the recycling center, the recycling scrapyard, excuse me. So they had a huge explosion last September, and it was unclear what caused it. And after sending some requests, we heard that there was a foreman that worked there said, you know, these piles of scrap have always been smoldering, which is, you know, alarming that's sort of how they would operate. But it's not necessarily clear what caused this huge explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily like a climate change article. That again, kind of is more the environment and public health. I mean, you know, there's potentially really serious like carcinogenic chemicals that can leak and leach from those types of explosions. And then, you know, afterwards when the fire department had to use this aqueous foam film solution to put out the fire, that also has chemicals that are cancer causing. So that was a big deal to the city, I think.
Yeah, a huge deal. And I think that that's the kind of thing where, you know, in the past, the explosion would have been covered. There would have been an explosion, but there wouldn't have been a kind of follow-up about an in-depth follow-up with the risks involved and the causes in a way that where I think that the service you provide is such an important service to the community because it's, you know, it's asking hard questions and it's the way journalism once was. And I think more and more it's just a kind of fluff and a filler and an entertainment and a kind of, you know, partisan enterprise. So, but, you know, what you're doing here is, it's a gift for the community's health and for the sort of holistic aspect of the community in terms of our daily life. You know, awareness and knowledge and the things that you're bringing up are things that we all need to be facing and tackling and taking care of and being aware of. And so I thank you for being here in Columbus and part of the Ledger team and asking the hard questions.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's what I think is so vital about journalism. I mean, my you know, kind of, I don't know, like mantra or mission is like, you know, I want to combat misinformation and disinformation. I want to educate people on the truth about environmental issues and climate change. And I want to, you know, once they're educated on that, like leave it up to them about what they want to do about these issues. You know, I'm not here to kind of push an opinion. I'm here to share the stories that hopefully inspire people to act. I mean, I know it's a very, very challenging time. And one thing I didn't, specifically with just climate change and environmental issues, it's a challenging time for a lot of things. But one thing I didn't mention earlier that I'd like to say now is like the reason that journalism works for me or sort of felt right is because, you know, I've had this climate anxiety for years. I mean, I've been just so overwhelmed. I mean, I lived in San Francisco when there are these huge wildfires and the whole city is, you know, has worse air pollution than Beijing or parts of India. I mean, it's really, really terrifying to live through that. I was there the day San Francisco turned orange, right? I was, and so when you live through these things and you're just paralyzed with inaction, it feels, you know, it's terrible. And so I'm hopeful that, I mean, for me, journalism is a way to combat my own anxieties and act in a way that feels productive and hopefully inspires other people.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why issues like this, like health issues, need to be politicized, to me, the way I see it. I think that, you know, everything becomes politicized and then, you know, it becomes, you know, is that good for corporate America or, you know, and then other people are like, yeah, but it's bad for the environment. And, you know, I think that there are many, it's a multifaceted thing. There are many sides to every issue, but there's no reason why we can't all work together, you know, to make the world that we live in as clean and healthy and prosperous as we can. You know, Gaia as a concept, you know, the sort of living earth concept. I guess Gaia was a goddess of some sort. But, you know, the idea that the earth is a living thing is not that far-fetched. I mean, it could be a metaphor, but it also could be a literal thing because, you know, we are on a living planet. You know, the other planets in the solar system are more inert and they're not, they don't support life. And we are, you know, trees and everything and plant life may be epiphytes on this living thing, Earth, and we might be parasites on it. But it is a whole system and we are part of that whole system and it's a living system and there's something sacred about it.
And that system is changing. I mean, it's like, you know, we talked about the word of the day. I mean, we are in a different era now of the planet that we're on. You know, someone who's 12 years old right now, like they've only lived in this time of, you know, certain parts per million of carbon dioxide. You know, they've only lived when the Earth has been X degrees above average in certain areas. I mean, I think climate change is one of the most, I think it's like the most fascinating thing to write about.
Yeah,
it's happening now and it's going to continue to happen. And how people decide to act or not act on it is interesting to me.
And some will say, you know, but there are cycles and, you know, there's been ice ages and, you know, periods of extreme heat and that it's cyclical and that, you know, we may or may not have, you know, the humans may or may not be as affecting it as much as we think or say we are. But everything we do affects everything that is. I mean, we have to, from the microcosm to the macrocosm, we have to realize that. We have to realize that every action we take, you know, does it serve the whole or does it just serve ourselves for convenience or otherwise? So it's so important to, as we move through life and move through this world, to realize that you know, we are affecting everything around us, and if we're affecting it even in small ways, you know, from the food we eat to the shoes we wear to the cars we drive, you know, that those things, why not live in a cleaner environment versus, you know, well, let's just make it smoggier, you know, like because I want to be pro gas or something. Like, no, like why not make it cleaner so that we don't, you know, get sick and have to go to the hospital. You know, just our, each person's actions make a difference.
Definitely.
So we won't solve the world's problems and we won't save the world, but you know, we can talk about these things and we can move the conversation forward.
Yeah, move the needle.
Yep, just incrementally, and that's all we can do. And each one of us makes a difference. And Kayla Hunter, I thank you so much for being our guest today on the radio.
Yeah, it's been fun. I hope to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're so grateful to you, and keep writing those important stories that make us think and make us adjust our actions.
Aye, aye, Captain.
All right, we're on board. Shoa, thank you for being our producer engineer extraordinaire today. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Thanks, CSU, Columbus State University, for letting us be on the radio. You can see the complete playlist of songs chosen by our guest, Kayla Hunter, today, DJ Kayla, on the website, arthouseradio.com. That's arthouseradio.com. We have but one life, so let's live it. And let's make this world a better place. Thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here next week on The Art House. Love and light, y'all.
Been sleeping, I've been so still, afraid of crumbling. Have I been careless, dismissing all the distant rumblings? Take me where I am supposed to be, to comprehend the things that I can't see. 'Cause I need to move, I need to wake up, I need to change, I need to shake up, I need to speak out. Something's got to break up. I've been asleep and I need to And as a child, I danced like it was 1999. My dreams were wild. The promise of this new world would be mine. Now I am throwing off the carelessness of youth to listen to an inconvenient truth.
need to wake up now.
Bingo. He'll edit all that out and it'll sound just like you know what we're saying.